This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which, if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good, as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finediningpodcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current front-runner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10 for you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh. I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy. Okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
So okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finediningpodcast. We listened to Mike Warnke, and specifically his album, Alive, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
Okay, bitch, watch this.
Hey.
Losers, in other words.
You got me straight gripping.
Bazinga.
What's that I hear? Maybe some good Christmas fun.
Bazinga is a good non-religious holiday greeting, I think, for us all.
And a merry bazinga to all of you out there. Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
We're here to have some good Christian fun.
That's right.
Caroline, what is Good Christian Fun?
It's a podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, the people who make Christian art and media. There's a lot of them. There's a whole world of them.
The people that suck it down.
That's right. Slurp, slurp. That's me. Oh. And I'm so excited because today we are finally getting to another comedian. We did one before that was not a hit, but we enjoyed it.
I don't understand. Shonda Pierce?
Yeah.
One of our top five. Let's do top five episodes. Number one with a bullet, Lauren Daigle. I'd say number one, 18 Kids and Counting.
18 Kids and Counting. Yeah. Number two, Shonda Pierce.
Number three, Lauren Daigle.
We've moved on, though. It's fine. But today we're going to talk about specifically Christian comedy, which is also another genre within the Christian art world.
What a genre. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you probably saw one of those silly John Christ videos going around.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Yeah, he's a guy.
Yeah, he's fun. I like a lot of his stuff, though.
Truly. Christy?
Yeah.
I think some of it, our friend Aaron Chewing has been in a few of his videos.
Yes, that's right.
And Aaron's very funny in those. Thank you, Aaron. We love you. We miss you every day.
Aaron, come back.
He's dead.
I miss you.
But today we're talking about Mike Warnke.
Yes.
Maybe the forerunner, the forebear, the Old Testament of Christian comedy, so we could enter into this New Testament phase we're in now.
The heyday.
One of the angry old prophets, so we could usher in the new gospel of Mark Lowry.
That's right.
Guess. I was looking up a few. There's a Christian comedy Wikipedia article, and it's littered with people you don't know and Victoria Jackson from SNL.
I don't know Victoria Jackson.
Oh, you will.
Oh, okay.
2019's coming.
Can't wait.
Oh, boy. But we have a very special guest with which we are going to do this great thing.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, you may know him from his podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour on NPR. You may also know him from his book, The Caped Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Glenn Weldon.
Man, I've been waiting so long.
Oh, boy.
For someone to scream your name.
And your microphone is so low. Let me turn you up, sir. Where
you
at?
You can move it back, too, if you want to lean back at all.
No, I'm good. I'm very comfortable. Very grateful to be here.
I want you to be reclined in horizontal plane of the episode. Just laying down.
You sound like a Phantom Thread lady. You want him flat on his back.
That's right.
Helpless, open, tender.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I want.
That's kind of our hope for all podcasts.
Go ahead and eat up those chips, though.
I'm just good. You know that intro song thing?
Yes, sir.
It's about to reach critical mass. You realize that. It can't get any bigger. You can't add any more. It will not hold it.
Oh, the opening theme song, not the guest intro. Yes.
That sounds like a challenge, Glenn. Yeah.
We have currently, I think, between 30 and 40 drops on there.
Uh-huh.
So
between 30 and 40?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think the goal is to get into the triple digits. See.
Lord.
Can you imagine for like 100? Our 200th episode? We're here to talk about good Christian fun. It's just like, it's just nothing.
30 seconds.
It's just static.
It's just a wavefront. That's all it is.
Oh, boy. Well, Glenn, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure.
Glenn is someone whose work I followed for a very long time, and we slid into each other's DMs a while back.
Totally did.
Oh, gross.
Sweet. It was very sweet. Glenn's been a very supportive voice, and I try to be supportive of him with my meager platform when I can be.
Uh-huh.
And someone who I admire. And again, one of these people who we met 5 minutes before recording.
Uh-huh.
I listen to you twice a week, man.
Oh, that's cool. I listen to you guys too. Oh. I've been listening. I was a big fan of Gilmore Guys. And then when you made this transition, I was
hesitant.
Please. I would be too. I'm still hesitant.
Yeah. Because, it's just not my wheelhouse. But you guys are just so damn charming that I just came along for the ride. I'm here.
That's very well. Thank you so much, Glenn.
Thank you.
That means a lot coming from you. What is your background with faith and Christianity or religiosity? What'd you grow up
with? Well, I'm not your first godless sodomite that you've had on the show, right?
Many sodomites.
Yeah.
I mean, sure.
Guilty.
Godless ones.
Truly no unchurched, like unstained.
We've had some godly sodomites and some godless sodomites. Uh-huh. I think we've had a little calm A, a little calm B. Yes.
Okay, good. Because, I was raised United Methodist, which is such a mainline Protestant religion. It's straight down the middle. It's like you put on some nice slacks, you go to the occasional bake sale, and it wasn't like a huge part of my life growing up. It was always the thing you did Sunday morning. It was, and we didn't shape our lives around it because I don't think it's constructed to do that. It was in, suburban Philadelphia, egregiously suburban, egregiously white. It was, again, slacks.
It was pretty compartmentalized, rather.
Yeah.
In your life.
Slacks in the pants and slack on the theology.
That's right.
Sure. Yeah, the follow up.
But I mean, I was a rule follower as a child. It was very important to me not to get in trouble ever.
Why is that?
I don't know. It was just, I think I overheard my mom say to somebody that a very strict moral sense in the very young is a sign of intelligence. And I think that was it for me because I just always wanted to be the smartest boy in the room. That's all I wanted out of life.
Sure.
So that I just sort of went in big time on it.
I think a lot of my behavior has been shaped by like aside comments my mom has made about other children or like other people.
Yeah.
Of like, well, they dress like that. And I'm like, I would never.
Yeah.
Because I want to be smart and special. Yeah.
And, they went to church and we went to Sunday school at the same time. And, it was fine. It didn't catch me in any way. It didn't really grab me. And then I knew from a very young age that I wanted to be a marine biologist.
Oh, yeah.
And
we all go through this phase.
Yeah.
We all have a horse phase or a marine biology phase.
Except I have a BS in marine biology. That's it never kind of went away.
That's amazing. You actually followed through.
I did.
That's cool.
I was told there would be no math in biological sciences, and I was lied to. And
that sucks, man. I'm sorry.
There was chemical
oceanography. That really blows.
There's chemical oceanography, physical oceanography, calculus 1, calculus 2, organic chemistry.
Did they at least have like dolphin
writing class to make up for it?
I saved that all. You know, people were telling me as a kid, you know, the writing thing is pretty, you don't suck at it. And I was like, well, that's not practical. I want to be, in my head, I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau. I wanted to talk to dolphins. This is what I had in my head.
Yeah.
It's not marine biology. That they made that very clear to us the first day of marine biology school, where they said, how many of you are here because you saw a lot of Jacques Cousteau specials and you want to talk to dolphins? And we all raised our hands. And they said, Jacques Cousteau
is dead.
Close. Related. Is a filmmaker, not a scientist.
Oh,
and the
what
air
a horrific
went
shock.
Out of the room. And we all just kind of...
All
so,
of you, yeah.
Yeah, so it was awful. So, but I always had this very scientific mindset, logic. And I think I was gravitating toward science. And I was reading about world religions. And so I don't know when the thing flipped, where I just felt like atheism was my thing. But it did at some point, and it might have been the day, because we had, you know, the youth pastor who was barefoot who played Dust in the Wind in the church.
Amazing.
And,
I don't know this song, Dust in the Wind. What's
it's
that?
Kansas. It's a Kansas song. Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
I'm not up on my, city or state named bands.
No, that's...
Like Chicago, Kansas...
Alaska.
Michigan.
Maine. Is that one?
Yeah, Michigan would be good. No. And so I we had this substitute guy come in, and he told the story about how, you know, NASA was trying to figure out the moonshot. Do you know where I'm going with this yet?
Yes.
NASA was trying to figure out the moonshot, and they couldn't, and that their computers just wouldn't work until one of the scientists, who was a Christian, remembered that in the Bible it says that Joshua stopped time. Stop the rotation of the earth, which he wouldn't have said, but fine.
Stop time?
Yeah.
The hell?
No, he asked God to stop time. God stopped time for Joshua. There you go.
Makes more sense.
And
yeah, I'm recalling
this.
As
soon as they factored that into their calculations with their computers, then they could, and that's when I remember being just so offended by that.
Really?
because it struck me like, you know, render up to Caesar what is Caesar's, you know, like leave the spirituality is over here, mm-hmm. and the science is over here. And when you try to kind of prove, because, I mean, you guys know this better than I, but like, isn't faith about the belief in things unseen? And as soon as you start to try to get actual empirical proof, it just feels like, well, you're not playing in the same sandbox.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Or it can almost like steal maybe a little bit from the sacredness of whatever you believe.
I mean, the whole point is to kind of get outside yourself and believe in something that can't be proved, right? Right?
It makes it smaller to put it in, like, we can prove with science, like, you know, Good Will Hunting style, like this huge equation that there must be order and because...
But I think, for the scientific-minded, though, that is extremely spiritual or beautiful. You know, it'd be like, wow, and God
pure
is
science.
Provable,
sure,
you know?
Like, in design of that. But I'm saying, like, using that as empirical evidence of, like, well, of course, this very personal worldview is absolutely true for everybody.
See, right.
Yeah. I was raised in a Christian school, and all of our biology classes were, like, very ass backwards, like, ways of proving that evolution is not real because giraffes' brains would explode if they drink water upside down or something.
See, that's it.
It's just stuff like that.
It's just,
you know what I'm saying,
I
right?
track with that, yeah.
It comes off as really defensive in a way that it doesn't, I don't think, needs to be. It just feels like, why are you fighting on this particular battleground when you have your own other deeply spiritual background? Leave the test tubes to us. And you guys do your thing. And then in college, when I was a scientist, theoretically anyway, I became an evangelical atheist, a person like
avid atheist.
Yeah, you would.
On a spectrum from Marta Dawkins, where you at with that?
I was reading The Blind Watchmaker.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm so glad that, you know, Sam Harris wasn't around or Christopher Hitchens wasn't around, because this was the 80s. I'm old. But man, if I saw you at a party and you were wearing a crucifix, I would like get beer drunk and then we'd have an argument.
Oh, wow.
Because it was important to me to dissuade you from your blinkered worldview, right? Mm-hmm. And man, I was such a dick. Because it was my religion. It was the thing that was shaping my life, this belief.
Yeah. Why was it important to like talk to people about that?
I have no idea. Because again, I think I was just a snot-nosed punk, probably. That factored in a lot.
Smartest boy in the room.
Well, and I wonder if it has to do with like the way a lot of us in college in those formative years use taste as a way to define ourselves. Like, I'm into the Kinks, and I actually think the Beatles suck. And, like, that stuff, if it's like, I'm using this as a replacement for, like, whatever character or integrity or, like, personality would be my own. So I wonder if atheism almost functioned like that.
Kevin, it was exactly that. Because I can remember we would have these arguments, and I would, you know, we'd argue and then go back to our, like, base positions. Mine was the fossil record. Theirs was the Bible. And that was it. There was nothing actually happening. There was no conversation happening. It was just shouting at each other. And at some point, and then there's phases to my atheism. So then it went to the phase of, well, whatever gives you comfort. Like that condescending asshole. Well, I suppose if it works for you.
Yeah, if you need the crutch, please. Here, take mine.
Here, take mine. which I thought was enlightened, but it just turned out to be a different kind of assholism.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And then finally, you know, here I am with like, I don't care. You know, just like.
Oh, like you've tapped out.
The thought of arguing with somebody about it is just so like, why? Why? And it's not just because it gives you comfort. It's because
I got to cross out a few segments.
It's what works for me, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to work for you. That's and as long as other folks feel the same way, that's kind of where I am.
Do you feel like, because I know atheism exists on a spectrum for those that basically, like, more or less, if they had to choose, subscribe to it. Do you have a worldview about religion as a whole in the macro? I've talked to atheists where it's like, I like that religion exists. I think there's a lot of bullshit, like anything else, like any institution, but there's a lot of good. Do you believe that religion is good for people, or that in an ideal society it would not exist?
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, if you're talking to 1989 Glenn, he'd be like, "Well, the Crusades," you know, like that would that would be my go-to. I don't think it's necessary to have like a moral view of the universe. I don't think you need religion per se. I think morality is a perfectly good philosophy is a perfectly good substitute. But I mean, it's here. You know, the gay stuff. I didn't. Maybe that factored into it as well, because you know, when I was trying to figure out who I was and what I liked, I didn't go to the church. Church was just like that. It felt like that. Didn't have the answers I was looking for. I went to science and I got all these books and I tried to attack this issue with logic. And you know, my parents had this book called Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask, which was a great book in the 60s for laying it all out there, being very practical.
Great movie.
Also, yes, it got a very weird adaptation.
There's a Woody Allen movie starring Gene Wilder.
Really?
And a bunch of folks.
Yeah, a bunch of folks. Parts of it were funny.
I would love to learn about sex from Woody Allen. I feel like that guy's got the answers.
No, that's what I call the neutral viewpoint is the Woody Allen. That's what we call zero on the sex spectrum.
But he was very frank, but then he was a dude in the 60s, so his view of homosexuality was fucked. It was like
mental illness stuff.
Yeah, it was mental illness. It was these people are deeply unhappy and they all want to be women. So that was, and so like that was science letting me down, right? So I just
that's interesting that, like, I guess popular science at the time was like, I think we have a dichotomy now of like, well, science is the progressive thing, but really it's still, there's only so far.
Oh yeah. Well, there was so much racist scientists going on for long racist science. And yeah, so it's just. There's a definite point where science still, it's like their worldview leak in, of course.
Yep.
Yeah.
But then I was a library aide, of course, and I came across this book that was about the Kinsey scale, like where you arrange yourself. And I was like, okay, I'm a 3, boom, done. And I could arm myself with that, right? Yeah. That was my armor, where it was like, I have figured this out. Now I never have to worry about this again. Yeah. And it didn't turn out to work either. That's not how that works.
You still don't identify. Wait, have you done Enneagram yet? Maybe you're a 3 on that.
I don't know, man. But we had these, we called them our cousins, but they were just friends of the family. My mom and their mother worked together. And so we'd go over to their house every Friday night and they'd play bridge. And I would hang out with their daughters, who were 6 years older than me. My brother's also 6 years older. And most of the time, they would just go out, and I don't know what they did, to the malt shop or whatever. But because
in their poodles, okay?
Rollerblades.
Yep. But they were a very evangelical family, and they were like in it to win it, man. They were deep. And so they knew that I was a comedy nerd because I tried to turn them on to my Steve Martin albums, which they did not like because of the language, and a bunch of other stuff. And they said, hey, we have this really funny record that you should try. And I remember it. I hadn't heard it in, what, 40 years. Mm-hmm. But, man, it all came back. Because I got it. Yeah, I got it. And because I think the guy's pretty funny. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it shocked me. And I asked him, I remember asking him if they had any more. And at the time they said, sure. And they tried to put on this one album where this woman sang about how she was, she ran a red light and then a mean old cop stopped her. And she told her that, you know, she was one with the Lord or whatever. And I was like, nope. No, sorry, that's not.
Oh yeah, oh,
wait a minute.
This is.
Wait a minute. What happens in this song?
Yeah,
she gets pulled over by a cop.
A mean old cop. I remember that.
Wait, this isn't the Leslie Phillips stuff, is it?
I have no idea who it is.
There's an artist. Oh, now Sam Phillips used to be Leslie Phillips.
Oh, this was a long time ago. Okay. This was in the '70s. Yeah,
okay. I couldn't possibly. She was early '80s. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it was like comedy songs.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
were
but that kind of mustard seed comedy, like a little, that's not really
mustard
it. Kind of doesn't quite.
Wait,
land.
What's mustard seed?
It's
comedy?
Like when you go to the mustard seed and there's a humored section. The mustard seed is a Christian bookstore.
Oh, okay.
And there's a humor section. You keep looking for something that's actually funny.
Yeah.
You never find it.
And it's like it's just a lot of jokes about like how women mm-hmm. came from Adam.
Hey, exactly.
Or like maybe like the Christian equivalent of like. Dave Barry,
yeah.
Like jokes for the bathroom,
yeah.
Like, like and it's like a book you keep in the little stand next to the toilet or something.
Exactly, yeah. My parents though had like the picture of Jesus over their bed mm-hmm. and the praying hands, a hot Jesus too, like you know.
Oh, like
and it always
white long hair,
blue eyes,
white hot Jesus,
white hot Jesus,
soft focus Jesus.
And this was in the '70s, right? And it always struck me, I could never figure out why they had this picture of this hippie above their bed, and they hated hippies. They hated
that
hippies.
Is funny. Yeah.
I mean, like he's got some conditioner in his hair, clearly. Like, but
yo, he's done some grooming. Like
he's done some grooming.
He doesn't have a beard. Well, no, he does. Yeah,
he totally did. Uh-huh. Totally did. And, but he like when mom would see like a dude like that on the streets of Westchester, Pennsylvania, just walking around campus or whatever, she would you know lean over and lock the door with her elbow because she's just terrified of hippies. But
yeah.
And yet they allowed a hippie into their bedroom.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I guess at this time aesthetically, this was like a very small portion of time where culturally the popular conception and view of Jesus and the popular conception of view of like what counterculture was and
right.
like hippiedom and all that stuff was aesthetically similar. Mm. It wasn't the same. It's like
funny.
Long-haired weirdos talking about love, man.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
like
wandering it, through with yeah. a crowd of people.
Yeah, not the case now. It feels very
I wonder if you could pinpoint a rift of like people that hated hippies like became this kind of Christianity and people that were very scared of hippies, like probably Tim LaHaye and all those guys.
Yep.
And then people but then there were like the Jesus freaks also who probably like Mike Warnke and his crowd who were like, Jesus, yeah, I can get with that guy.
Yeah,
like,
let's rap
cool.
about Jesus.
He's got long
yeah.
hair and yeah, whatever.
Jesus.
And that's where you get like Calvary Chapel, I guess.
Did you have any other exposure to like any Christian pop culture at all, even like any of the movies or the music or anything?
Not
like
a bit.
That?
Nope. Nope. This is why listening to this podcast is a revelation because I have never heard.
Yeah, I guess
isn't
it's like
insane how much there is.
Yeah.
And how popular.
It's an anthropological dive.
And yeah. I'm fascinated whenever I hear you guys talking about the Christian music because, I mean, you know, you guys, you'll be there saying, yeah, this is kind of, this grooves, like, this is a bop. And I will be hearing the whitest. Like, you know,
that's fair.
Okay. Do you ever listen to, like, Ray Charles and, like, Georgia On My Mind, and you can hear these background singers? He is just this thing of pure soul.
Mm-hmm.
And in the background, you can just hear the turtlenecks.
Georgia,
you know, you can just. You can
my just mind.
It's just, you could, and the shellacked hair.
Yes.
You can just hear it through the speakers. And that's
the
kind of what
swing.
A lot of the Christian music that I've heard through this show, it kind of hits me.
I think that's fair.
Space.
I think sometimes we're so desperate for a bop that we find it even
yeah.
in the slacks.
Yeah.
But you're saying you didn't connect with the dulcet tones of Point of Grace?
No.
While listening to this,
nope.
I wonder.
You don't have the right to remain silent.
See, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. Right here,
that's
right here.
Funky.
It's funky rock, and Glenn's wrong.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I wonder what our listeners experience too, who share your perspective, because there's more of them than I would have ever anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
But who also feel the same, or have surprised themselves and actually found, you know what? DC Talk is the greatest band of all time.
These yeah. guys do rock.
I'd be curious.
Yeah, throw out a poll. I think you wouldn't be surprised.
I am curious though, like in your work writing about comic books, it feels like so much of that, and especially now with the monolithic dominance of Marvel stuff, it feels like that almost has become a new theology for a lot of people, right? Like a lot of the Captain America, certainly Superman, there's like total parallels to it. But what's been your experience like investigating that stuff and like the religiosity, the fervor with which people are fans of that stuff?
Well, whenever there's a whole sort of wing of people who talk about comics who say, they're our modern mythology. And I mean, simmer down. I mean, okay, sure. They are a collective, maybe I would say folk tales, but mythology, I don't know.
Where do you find the distinction?
Mythology is about like how stuff in the world works. Mm-hmm. It's about gods and goddesses, and you know, like we're trying to explain what thunder is. Mm-hmm. And folktales are just stories with you know some powerful people like Paul Bunyan or whatever. Paul Bunyan, Thor. You know, that's kind of where it gotcha. Kind of comes.
Interesting. The thing, so like a moral tale versus like
exactly
this is how the world works for
yeah,
us.
Yeah, because I mean those stories are originally they were written for very young children, and they're kind of morality tales. They're mm-hmm. little everyman. Stories about pure evil and pure good. And, you know, as the genre has matured, people are trying to make that a little bit more nuanced, and they're succeeding, and some of them are really failing. But one thing that never struck me, that never made any sense to me, is that in both the DC and the Marvel universes, these dudes who get powers through spider bites or can just beat up people because they're rich, whatever, rub shoulders.
The two genders.
Rub shoulders.
Spider bites and rich bullies.
Rich bullies and spider bites. My two passions. They rub shoulders with actual gods. Like, you know, in the DC universe, there's a creature, there's a hero called the Spectre who is basically the spirit of wrath who fights crime, mm-hmm. right? Sure, why not? And then, you know, there's Thor and there's Hercules all over the Marvel universe. Like, and many of them don't have, like Batman is theoretically an atheist, and how can he be in that universe when there are gods?
He's just an atheist?
Well, yes, theoretically.
In the canon, Batman was like staunchly there.
According
no
to
God.
One writer. And there's also like a really extremely powerful and active hell in the DC universe and in the Marvel universe. Mm-hmm. And yet they're related, you know, these moral tales. But, you know, there's just... The dudes are hotter, I think. You know,
that's such a good point of how often like these superheroes who are just humans are rubbing shoulders with like gods and aliens and yet remain like anti-spiritual in
yep,
some way, you
yep.
know, or like that's not even discussed. It's
right.
not a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
is there a god?
That Black Widow doesn't have like, yeah, like a crisis of faith when she meets Thor or something like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What are you?
Yeah. Yep. They're all like,
it's
yeah,
very
fine.
Strange. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or I guess they're just aliens to them. I
sure.
Know, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then finally, you know, this is our first episode of the Christmas season. It's our first episode coming out in December, so it's kind of good Christmas fun.
You mean Bazinga season.
Bazinga season. Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
That's offensive.
Bazinga season. And what better topic than Mike Warnke to talk about Christmas and Bazinga season. But did you have any Christmas traditions growing up? Any holiday traditions in your family?
Oh, sure. We lit the Advent candles. You guys know about that, right? Yeah, sure. The
Advent candles?
Yeah, yeah. You know, the four Sundays of Advent, you light a candle. Basically, it's you're kind of...
I don't think
we had enough like liturgy in my loose Protestant.
You're kind of drafting on Hanukkah a
no,
little bit.
No, we did. I remember
candles.
This now because, yeah, I remember there being... I went to like a Dutch Reformed church,
oh,
I
sure,
think,
okay.
But that was not... It was loose. And but they did have at the altar like four big pillar candles that I'm sure they got at TJ Maxx or something.
Yep.
But the Christmas week one was red.
Yeah,
that was
yeah,
like...
Yeah.
Party's coming.
That's the other thing. Just remember that in the Methodist Church, the United Methodist Church, we do have communion, but it mm-hmm. was Welch's grape juice and cubes of Wonder Bread. Couldn't have
Wonder
it
was Bread. How
they were
fitting.
Teetotal. Yeah.
Yeah.
How fitting. Absolutely no nutrients.
There's a lot of gluten-free communion in LA now.
Is that true? That
yeah.
Makes
yeah.
Sense.
Yeah.
Makes
yeah.
Sense.
I've had so many varieties of bread over time, like a cracker mm-hmm. system. I've had like a pita thing that was almost sweet and like honey. And I was like, ooh, this is
wait,
sinful.
Is cracker system another term for the white supremacist patriarchy?
That's absolutely correct. The cracker system of oppression.
We checked out one church, we've actually been a few times, where the bread is really tasty.
Yes, oh, yeah? That's what I'm talking about. That tastes like honey, yes. And it's like, well, like someone hand-baked it.
I'm like, sweet. Sign me up for this communion.
No, this communion is way too indulgent.
It's very good. Okay, so so the Advent
but
stuff.
But I think you've ever had the actual bread. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. But in terms of like religious stuff, I mean, you know, I think my parents might have gone to midnight mass on Christmas. As soon as I could beg off, I did. And what would happen was when we would go to church, they'd go into the church and I'd wait for them to go into the church. And then I'd kind of walk towards Sunday school and turn around and go back to the car where I could read the Sunday paper and memorize the television grid and read the funnies.
No way.
Memorize the
you
television
just chill
grid.
In the car
I did
the whole
this
time?
Too. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Hey, are you up on Nancy, this new Nancy?
No, loving the new Nancy.
So good,
it's
right?
So,
you're
good.
On it now too.
Yes, I started reading the other day. It was fantastic.
I started sending Caroline some of my favorite Nancy. And then days later, she would send them back to me as if she discovered them.
Because I truly blotted it out in my brain. Like, I did not remember.
You even reacted to it. You gave it a ha-ha.
I gave it a ha-ha. That must have been a half-hearted.
Highest praise.
Oh, boy.
That's funny. So, well, when you kind of, like, veered into hard atheism, was that a difficult discussion with your parents at all? Or were they like, no, it's fine?
Didn't talk about it with them. Yeah. It was always my mom's thing than dad. Dad was spiritual.
Yes.
That's what my mom would say.
Yes.
And he very rarely went to church. But, I did get caught once sitting in the car. She saw me go back to the car, and that was a conversation that we had.
Like a bad day.
Yeah, but when we talk about it now, she's like, you don't believe in anything, and I was like, well, I believe in people.
Yeah,
I believe in.
Do you feel like that's the
humanity?
Like, that's your worldview is like like the goodness of people.
Uh huh.
That sounds reductive the way I put it. Oh, the goodness of people.
If that gives you comfort,
yeah. Does that help you sleep at night? Yeah,
oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's always a difficult conversation because I mean, you know, but I always suspected because like she was raised Baptist and she ran the hell away from that to go to Methodism. So I just figured I'm just kind of further along the spectrums.
Yeah, you're carrying the torch for her.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're just continuing the path that she first tried.
Yeah.
Favorite Christmas album of all time?
Sia's Christmas album is really good.
Sia's Christmas album
is really, really good.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
It's all originals, right?
And there's three new songs
which
that just came out, she just released, including Round and Round, which is a Perry Como song. But the other two are originals. And it's so good.
I'm so glad we live in the age of Sia. She's a good influence.
She does. She brings a light to the world.
That's right.
Unfortunately, my first memory of her is when she was the musical guest when our current president hosted.
Yeah.
And he said, thanks to Sia. I'm like,
where is this
This
place?
Sucks.
So well, have you guys already talked about yours? Favorite Christmas
album?
I think we said it maybe last year. I go back and forth.
Yeah.
And mine's kind of a basic bitch answer, but I go back and forth between Charlie Brown Christmas Vince Guaraldi Trio.
Sure.
And Sufjan Stevens' first album, the collection of five EPs, Songs for Christmas.
Right.
I think those are, that one's a modern club. But yeah, I go back and forth between those two.
Yeah. I think the Vince Guaraldi, that's one we've always listened to.
Yep.
My fan.
We had that too.
That's a good one.
I don't know if it, like, even the Amy Grant stuff that we've listened to, I'm looking for a new classic.
You need a new
classic.
New something in your life?
I do, because I just,
present.
It's the same too every year. I don't know how to branch out, and it feels overwhelming because there's something weirdly cynical about when someone makes a Christmas album, like, oh, I don't know, I'll put out a Christmas album, but then people can do it really well, like, see it. So,
yeah.
But I guess that's all original stuff.
You know what, have you listened to the She and Him Christmas album?
Uh-huh.
That one's nice. Uh-huh. Zooey Deschanel band.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's good.
I feel I did like that for a while. I feel like I exited that phase in my life. I feel like I graduated from, you know, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child.
And you smashed your ukulele, which I know you have.
I have two. I'm just kidding. I have three. One's a baritone.
Did you talk about Christmas specials yet? You're going to be doing that.
No, not really.
I don't know of any like explicitly Christian Christmas
I bet we
specials.
Could dig some up.
I mean, Nestor the Long-Eared Christmas Donkey. Any recollections? That is misery porn. That is about
Is that a donkey in the manger stable?
Yeah, he's very, very long. It's a Rankin Bass special. It is wildly racist. And it's about this donkey with very, very long ears who turns out to be the donkey that transported Jesus from...
Dimension.
You guys can jump
Nazareth?
In here. From Nazareth to maybe, Bethlehem, yeah.
Maybe we're not the best experts on the geography of Jesus' journey. There was an episode we put out last week. I cut it out, but there was a good 10 or 15 minutes where we were speaking with our guest, unsure of the geography of is Bethlehem in Africa.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Which I was pretty sure it wasn't, but...
When it was Jesus and they were going to Egypt, which is in Africa.
Yeah.
Bethlehem is not in Africa.
Yes.
Okay. Because that was going to really make me feel so stupid. Okay, but the long-eared donkey, that is really similar to The Star, which came out last year.
Oh, really?
Which is about the donkey that transports Mary and Joseph.
Yeah,
so it sounds like they just ripped it.
Whoa.
Yeah, probably just ripped it.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
This is a scandal.
This should have been rocking the entertainment industry, and it didn't.
Kelly Clarkson should be pissed. Yeah. She was in that movie for some reason. Oprah was in that movie some reason.
And the Little Drummer Boy special, the Rankin Bass special, is its spiritual sister, because it's just about, like, abuse, child abuse, and then, you know, a little bit of uplift at the very end.
Oh, boy.
Because he's playing the drum for a pregnant woman, for a woman who's just given birth.
The Little Drummer Boy falls apart upon inspection, upon cursory inspection.
Wait, why? What's wrong with it?
Well, it's this kid showing up late, and then he's like, I don't have any gift. I don't have any money. I'm super poor. And, like, imagine if I said that to you. I showed up to your birthday. I'm like, I don't have a gift for you. I have money. I'm very poor, Caroline. And then you were like, oh, okay, that's fine. But I said, but I could do a podcast for you. Because it's like, it's what he does. He's a little drummer boy.
Yeah.
And so it'd be like me being like, hey, welcome to Cook. And it's like, you're just standing at your party like, I don't want this.
Kevin, nothing would make me happier than give me the gift of a live podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Imagine you have just given birth and you're lying there.
Yeah, just giving birth and someone's like rat tatting on a
and you're I give you the gift of percussion. Like, that's not a thing. That's not, nobody wants that.
The lamb and ox kept time, which to me is the headline that the lamb and ox are sentient beings that are like
musical geniuses.
Yeah, are on the 2 and 4.
They're probably clapping on the 1 and 3.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Sure. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Sure.
Glenn, let's take a break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now.
Mm.
And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with the new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that can kind of propel me into
to feel as incredible as you could feel.
To exercise more, to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that. And then
good
going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GoodChristianFun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/GoodChristianFun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
The
I agree.
The first month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun. Let's dive in to the biggest Bazinga season comedian of all time, Mike Warnke. Come on, let's go. Mike Warnke. Uh-huh. Never knew him growing up. Never listened to him.
No.
Didn't even kind of know about him.
Before your time.
Yeah, I very first heard about him because one of our listeners emailed us, kind of drawing our attention, like, you should do this guy. He is a crazy story.
And yeah.
They were not wrong.
And that was him. He was using a pseudonym, and then he wrote us.
I'm available for interviews.
I hear he's available at 313. Yeah, but no, I know. Here's what I do want to highlight in talking about this, because we talked to Glenn. We always let the guest more or less dictate the subject, because that always works better if there's some personal connection. If not, we just assign something to them. Glenn said, oh, this Mike Warnke album, Alive. Alive with an exclamation point.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, great. We'll get Alive. It's not available digitally, yeah, which makes sense, the, you know, because of the label, as we'll find out in his story, disowned him, stopped selling all his stuff. So there's no like digital contract to put on streaming service like Spotify or iTunes or Apple Music. Mm-hmm. But then it also wasn't on YouTube, because usually you can find a lot of the good stuff that you can't find in the streaming. It's all going to be on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't on that. So I was like, okay, well, I'll buy it on cassette and figure out how to transfer it over. I did that. Cassette got there. It was the wrong tape inside the cassette box. And so the seller was like, I'm sorry, I don't know how that happened. I was like, it's fine. But then I had to get a vinyl. So I bought the vinyl from a guy in Sacramento 4 days ago, and I had to priority ship it.
Oh my
so
goodness.
It got here.
It was like $50
No, 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 no. It was not that, because it was very cheap.
Yeah. Was the tape also a Mike Warnke album?
It was.
It's just a different Mike
Warnke?
It was
a set of two. It was like, what? And I did digitize those for future episodes.
Oh, we should.
I mean,
yeah,
we'll see.
I don't know. Maybe this bullet runs dry.
They were the albums he did after. One thing I was, and not to be like a, you know, vinyl guy up my own nose, the vinyl did sound so much better than the cassettes. Cassettes degraded so much.
Oh, that's too bad.
And the vinyl, we'll listen to clips, but there's clicks and hisses and pops on it. But overall, the fidelity is so much better than cassette, which is kind of weird to think of.
They got it right the first time.
With vinyl?
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was the journey in getting here. But aren't you glad we took it? We uploaded to the Google Drive,
sent
it to you guys.
That was amazing.
Wasn't that a fun, you know, but it did, like, now I know how to do that. So now if there's like weird listeners, if there's weird vinyl or tapes that you don't know what to do with.
Send them to Kevin. He's starting a side business.
I'll pay for the, no, I'm not starting a side.
Kevin, can make a job.
Digitized, like, Christian, like, bootlegs that nobody's asking for.
Any bootleg, doesn't have to be Christian.
Okay, so you don't know anything about his story.
I don't. I just know we bought that album, and that was the only thing and you can't really get a good look at him on the album, because he's kind of weirdly lit. He's on stage.
He's in the shadows.
He's in the shadow, but you can kind of see, hippie outlook. Like a hippie sort of like shape.
Mm-hmm.
Beardy guy in 1975.
Lots of hair. Some hoops in the ears.
Oh, I didn't see that. Spectacles.
Yeah.
Yep. That's all I know about the guy.
Yeah, I would describe as like 70s walrus chic.
Oh, sure.
Is that
sure?
Is that bad? I mean, the mustache. That's what I'm saying. This mm-hmm. is the mustache.
Oh, okay.
But okay, so his story is, I don't even know how to do the, I know, I guess there's like a big headline story of it. He started doing ministry stuff. A big part of that was talking about his history with the occult. As a satanic high priest, as a heroin addict, as all this stuff, blah, 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 blah.
A drug pusher. Had 1,500 people under his care as a satanic priest.
Yeah, keeps throwing in these little
bits, details.
Little details.
Yep.
chopped off fingers at one point. You're like, oh,
yeah, well, let's come back to that. Fingers. And he's, I think he at one point said he ate fingers or things like that. Like, yeah.
Oh, no, that was
book.
Him saying, I asked the guy, have you ever eaten fingers? Because I'm going to punch you in the face. And but yeah, the first casual.
Yeah, but I think he does mention cannibalism in like some other book. Right? Like this story just grew and grew and grew.
He very casually drops the Satanism. This is the first time he mentions it on the album.
So my religious experience is a little fouled up, you know. And it's probably one of the reasons I got into Satanism and the occult. But I think that's one of the, also the one of the reasons I never made a preacher, you know.
It's kind of like yeah, that's kind of why I killed all those people.
Yeah, don't mind me.
I'm stressed out. My camera's busy.
You guys wanted to know about killing all those people? Like, I guess I'll tell you.
We'll circle back.
Yeah.
So before this, he puts out a book called The Satan Cellar. It's a best-selling book that describes all this stuff in detail, all these stories of like, here's what we did, here's what we sacrificed, all the gory details. And
can I fill in some of the detail there? Because so he his parents died by the time I think he was 13, and so he lived with aunts, and then he lived with grandparents in San Bernardino, California, and then he went to college, and this like 1 year period apparently in college is when he became like a hot Satanist and was like really into it. And then he joined the Navy to get away from Christians he was meeting at college, apparently, like Campus Crusade people. And
your alma mater, way to go.
Yeah. And then he was saved in the Navy. And after that, he was actually ordained as a deacon in the Chaldean church known as the Assyrian Church of the East.
Okay.
A Nestorian church, which I tried to like read up on what that meant. It's like a very nitpicky thing about Jesus's like divinity that I couldn't wrap my head around. But anyway.
Man, you did not just stick to the Wikipedia highlights.
Guys, if you get down this wormhole, it is so fascinating because there's just so much online about him too. And so
Caroline's apartment is filled with jars of pee and red twine
red
on the
yarn
wall
everywhere.
With Warren Key and Satan.
Yeah. And so then after that he kind of became this like traveling speaker sort of preacher guy. And then he would do these like speaking engagements, and I think that's how this was recorded. I don't think this was recorded as a comedy show. Like, I think it was recorded as like
they said it was recorded. Yeah, incidentally.
Yeah, incidentally, yeah. Like as part of this big ministry night or something
Little
like that.
Little did they know.
Yeah, and so then that's because he wasn't setting out to be a comedian or an entertainer. I think he was setting out just to be like a speaker or preacher.
There's a few interviews on YouTube where he says like, "Yeah, I was just doing that." And I would, you know, sprinkle some jokes in, but then people like the jokes more. And so I focus on that, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he discovered his inner Michael Winslow at one point, because there's a lot.
Oh, dude, the clip I put down is called Michael Winslow Audition.
That's so funny.
I hear this noise down at the other end of the bush, and it went like this, sort of. It went.
This goes on for 2.5 more minutes.
Yeah, settle in. It's so long.
All right.
Yeah. So then he kind of grew as this like comedian, and he would talk about his Satanism story. And then he put out this book, The Satan Cellar, in 19 something. But it became a huge like bestseller, and all these Christians were suddenly like, oh my gosh, Satanism is a problem. And then you kind of find out beforehand, like he had partnered with this other guy who was like an expert on the occult, quote
Satan.
Unquote. Yeah.
It was Satan.
Yeah, and it was another minister guy who would like go around in, I think he called it like the Satan Mobile, that had, it was like filled with paraphernalia from the occult to like show people like, this is what's going on.
And that name makes a promise that the car cannot live up to.
Satan Mobile.
And all so aboard.
Then, and so then Warnke, maybe we'll get to this, kind of cribbed some of that knowledge about the occult from this guy. And then was going to write this book about it. And this book got really big, and like Billy Graham is reading it and all these people, and to the point where like police officers are using Mike Warnke as like an expert witness to help them figure out how to fight Satanist cults.
The cops used him as a witness?
Yes.
Oh,
and so
no.
and then this was all sort of tied in around the time of like the Satanic Panic, where everyone thought like virgins were being sacrificed all the time. Honestly, in no small part because of Mike Warnke's crazy stories he would tell, which was that they were like doing ritual rape and like sacrifice and all this kind of crazy stuff.
So Mike Warnke is the reason my parents took away my Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes. Yeah.
So this sound.
Yeah. So everyone was all worried about that. And of course, we now know like there was really nothing going on. And also Satanists do not do ritual sacrifice. Yep. They're like basically humanists. Yep.
The way the numbers change are hilarious after the like ultimate expose. Because at one point, like when he's doing these speaking engagements and stuff, he says like, yeah, there was 1,500 people in our occult. Uh-huh. And then it changes to, there was 1,500 people that knew about our coven, and then there was only 15 in it. 8 of them died. 5 of them, I don't know where they are.
Oh my gosh. There's
whatever the case may be.
There's one insane detail from his book that he had gotten. He was like such a high priest in the Satanist world that they gave him his own apartment. And when he arrived in the apartment, there were two hot, blonde, naked women on the rug.
Oh, yeah, sex slaves, essentially.
Who said, like, we come with the apartment. And we're his sex slaves. Like, this is a story he told all the time. And he was like, talk about how they just like did it all the time and they would do his bidding. But he was so strung out on heroin. He didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm.
And then the, which all of it being basically fabricated, if like not entirely fabricated, all of the details and the storytelling and the narrative and stuff, it ends up saying more about just this guy's mindset.
Exactly.
Too. That he was, one of the funniest parts is like, he was lying about doing drugs. It wasn't like, I didn't do drugs, and he did do them. It's like, I did a lot of drugs. It's like, no, you were a loser. You didn't do drugs.
Yeah, so in 92, Cornerstone Magazine came out with this huge article that exposed him. And
it's like a little spotlight team.
Exactly, yeah. It was just these two guys, and they went and interviewed like all the people that knew him at this time, and they did over 50 interviews or something like that, just to like, because they had heard rumors, I think, that Mike Warnke like maybe wasn't telling the truth. And like, little did they know. And so they talked to all these people, including like his girlfriend who was dating him at the time that this period happened. And she was like, no, he was like basically like a Catholic kid, and we would go get ice cream every day. And she's like, if he was strung out on heroin, like I would have known. And he had short hair, and he like didn't have long black nails.
He would describe as like, yeah, I had white long hair down to my butt, and fingernails were 5 inches long.
Wet.
Yeah, yeah. And there's pictures of him just like looking like
just like a total dingus. Yeah. And so they did this whole interview, and then on top of all that stuff about like the Satanism being a lie, they also discovered that like he had cheated on his wife's. Like a few times, and then cheated on the woman that he left his wife for.
And there was domestic abuse allegations.
And there was domestic abuse. And then there was, of course, like embezzlement. And he was like getting people to donate money to like this fictional kid named Freddy who had been overtaken by Satanism. And he would appeal to them, be like, wouldn't you be so sad if your kid ended up like Freddy?
Uh-huh. I'd like to imagine him on the phone, like, oh, I'll go get Freddy.
And then he would get this huge influx of donations, and the like administrator at the time would be like, yeah, I would knew every time he told the Freddy story, because we'd get envelopes being like, for Freddy, filled with money. And so then they were just like living high on the hog off of all this money they were making from going around telling the Satanism story, but it wasn't enough. And then they were asking their accountant to write them blank checks that they could just use at any given point. So all of this came to light all at once in 92.
Cornerstone, what's Cornerstone Magazine?
It's defunct at this point, but I think it was just kind of like a Christian magazine at the time.
Okay.
It might have been like akin to, it sounded like, and I truly don't know, so forgive me, but it sounded like a little bit Christianity Today, where they talk about just like religion and news events, and there's like Christian op-eds and stuff. And then there's like CCM Magazine, which is a lot more concerned with just like entertainment. Yeah. It felt like a kind of a medium between the two.
Exactly. But maybe a little bit of like Relevant. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about back that, because it is this Christian publication, is at the end of the article, the writers go into this long thing of like, now some of you may say we're being unchristian by not confronting him first before we publish this, but he's a public figure, and Matthew 18 says this and this.
There you go.
And also like, we believe, and they just
did
go
the work.
Yes.
And they did try to do it, but he would not speak to them.
Oh. Yeah, and so they were like, you know, we believe that he should, you know, end his ministry, stop saying this stuff, he should return the money, he should do this and that. And basically, like, used Christian morality to, like, justify this, you know, gossip article they wrote. But that was true and was necessary, I think.
Yeah, and unlike Louis C.K., he kind of tanked after that.
Yeah.
Like, his career is
still going.
He's still going.
He still has a website, and they still ask for donations. And
yeah.
And there's a whole PDF they put on there of, like, answering for the like scandal of 92 or whatever. Right. And he still denies it, by the way. He says, I was part of a Satanist cult. I did cheat on my wife. I'm sorry. We are having some people look at our finances, but I was part of a state. Like, he won't let that go.
Okay.
And there was even a follow-up book that said that, too.
Yes. Oh, like, yeah.
So there might have been exaggeration.
It was called Friendly Fire, and it was like, what to do if the church disappoints you or something like that.
So
it's
this really interesting case study and like, why was that so appealing? Why was it... Why did it speak to your mom so much where it's like, hell yeah, let's throw away the Dungeons and Dragons? What about it tapped into people? Because in retrospect... It seems less like, it just seems like a snake oil salesman kind of like just getting into a market rather than like, oh, you know, there were some good things about this guy and he kind of stumbled and fell from grace. He had a good thing going. He screwed it up. It almost seems like he's a Coen Brothers protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like just kind of a, I mean, who knows?
He reminded me like straight up of L. Ron Hubbard, of this guy who was like, had a charismatic thing and everyone kind of knew he was a liar, but like his lies were so interesting that they just sort of let him go anyway.
Yeah.
And then somehow he like formed a
following. It's because in modern life there isn't ultimate evil. I mean, Nazis. Okay, Nazis. That's a one.
Sure.
This is a gauntlet.
Nazis, Satanists.
Well, but some of the Nazis might
have been. Caroline, no.
But, I mean, this brings you back. When you are, somebody says there are Satanists around the corner, then all of a sudden your life is in stark contrast. Now there's us as humanity, and there's the Satanists, and we don't have to feel any compassion because they're sacrificing people, right? It's right.
Monsters.
It's turning people into superheroes and supervillains. It's basically just kind of having this very stark contrast. It's fear-mongering, sure it's not, and I'm not saying it's not, but it's a very effective fear-mongering because you create a fantasy villain.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a big part of that is that it does reinforce like dichotomies and moral superiority that are probably false because it's like, well, yeah, I did this awful thing and I did this and I did a shitty thing at work, but I didn't freaking have sex slaves. Like, so it makes you feel like on it.
Yeah. And for Christians, it's that very appealing salvation story of like things were so drastic.
Yeah, of course.
Only God could have turned this man into what he is now.
Right. Because that's rock bottom, right? I mean, exactly. Sacrificing children, I suppose.
Well, and also, and they point this out in the article too. It was like, if they were actually doing like ritual rape all the time, by the time he got out of this, like, why wasn't he reporting them to the police ending this?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, there's some very
glazes
dark
on
stuff
past
here.
That. Yeah,
but yeah,
the thing is though that I mean, like the guy's act is pretty. I'm going to give it a B.
It's
well, let's talk
solid.
About the act. Let's talk about the act because
so know all that and
know
then you can
that,
listen to him.
And that
it's
being said,
pretty amazing how believable he.
And yeah, there's stuff here that's not without merit. Even from the beginning, this album runs like a little bit south of 50 minutes. Okay. Let's just listen to some of the first part, which is about cookie cutter Christianity.
He said, you know, Mike, I called you. I didn't call your invitation to Billy Graham. I didn't call your invitation to Dave Wilkerson. I didn't call your invitation to Nikki Cruz. I called you.
I don't know this last
time. And if you want to be the kind of Christian I want you to be, then you're going to be you, and you're going to be you for me. You're going to bloom where you're planted, Mike. You're going to do what you can do for me. And I love the Lord so much for that. And I get so tired of people that get out their big cookie cutter and get out the dough of what Christians are and go, that's a Christian. And if you don't fit into that mold, why you just.
They roll the dough. He just keeps doing success. And then a gun fires. Yeah. So he's talking about this, like, kind of interesting idea of, like, faith expression doesn't work just one way.
You have to take a cookie cutter to the dough and cut the Christian out of it. That means you leave a lot left over. Because, you know, when you make a cookie, you leave a lot left over after you cut the cookie out, right?
Cookie math.
Well, what I want to know is, if God didn't want all that dough in the Christian, how come he made it all in the first place?
I believe me, I've got extra dough.
And if you have to use your cookie cutter to cut out what a Christian looks like, that means you think God doesn't know when's enough. And I'm not the one to say that. Amen?
Amen.
Amen.
What I find interesting about that is, one, like, there's a lot of, like, and I know he's not a theologian. He's very simplistic in a lot of the hermeneutics of like, yeah, it's all literal. Like, yeah, Jonah happened, Adam and Eve were real people. Yeah,
and he's doing this very like gravy and grits impression of just like, I'm a hometown preacher or something, you know?
So you might be a Christian.
It's and he even brags at one point, like, I don't do a lot of reading or like, I'm not a super smart guy, but I know this, you know? And like, and he makes fun of people, the intellectuals who don't believe that God made Adam or whatever.
Sure. Oh, but, no, and it gets worse in his later specials.
Yeah, but to your point, this clip, I actually was like, I agree with this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a good point and probably something he did have to say because he doesn't look like a Christian preacher. He is this, you know, hippie walrus. And so that was like a good thing for him to both handle the like shock of what he looks like.
The shock.
But also, but I think I think it was a good point. Like, I was like, yeah, I agree with this point that, like, God made us in a certain way, and to cut out parts of ourselves to become a Christian is not good.
It kind of ignores some of the basics of baking, where you once you cut out the cookies, then you roll.
You roll and you reuse it. Yeah, I mean, the metaphor breaks.
And then what's the icing? Is the icing?
When do the chocolate chips coming into play?
Exactly.
Are these sugar cookies?
What if you're underbaked and then your dough falls apart?
Uh-huh.
But so much of the basic, as flawed as the metaphor is, the framework of it is how a lot of people talk about sexual orientation, too.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean that in the progressive, and obviously he's not progressive, but but his argument is like, yeah, like, if we believe God creates personalities and forms people in the womb and all this stuff, who are we to say, blah, blah, like, go to conversion therapy, blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah, like, cut these parts of yourself out.
Yeah, and I was struck by, this is skipping to the end, but I was struck by his big message. The thing he builds up to is anticlimax. It's so, like, all I'm saying is to give Jesus a fair chance. And that's it. That's like the big applause line. That's like, I'm out.
Yeah, and he's like, woo!
And it's like, well, okay, that's a pretty good message, right?
That's a great starting point, you know? And, yeah.
And maybe he gets more aggressive in other albums, but there wasn't like, all right, who's going to make a decision tonight? It was very, even in that clip, you could tell like how it was sprinkled with jokes and different bits of silence. Is Mike Warnke the Hannah Gadsby of his generation?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Take a sip of water here.
Yikes.
Gonna let you guys go.
Wait, what? What did I say?
No, I don't think he is.
Is he the Mike Birbiglia? No, of course I don't think he is.
Well, I know. But I think as far as the intonation, to me, I was just like, this is so Jeff Foxworthy
all the
time of just like making like, well, I don't know about that, but she might be a little bit of this, like a lot of that.
Sure, but I'm just saying like the spaces in between and the long, like sometimes 2 or 3 minute stretches where there's no jokes and no laugh breaks or punchlines.
Yeah, I guess so.
Is that like
a Birbiglia like storytelling kind of style?
But then it just made me think, oh, Hannah Gadsby was just like, she did people say TED Talk.
Yeah.
People say TED Talk about Nanette. But in retrospect, weirdly after listening to this, I was like, no, it was a sermon.
It was a
brilliantly executed sermon.
Well, you can tell that this audience wasn't prepared for like a comedy show because there are some solid jokes that just get nothing because they're not prepped for it.
Uh-huh. Yes.
They're like,
when he's talking about the hippies outside and they're going like they're shining their boots.
Yeah.
And then he stops and he goes, he does the Michael Winslow thing. And he has silence. It's loud. And that's solid work. That's a good piece of business. That's a really smart piece of business.
Silence is.
Yeah, it's like, right, no.
Like, yeah, I guess like God is like that.
I will say, yeah, Christian audiences, congregations are primed for like floating opposites and wordplay like that being like, breaks more than like,
you know? Right. That's so funny.
If loudness is silence, then our silence must be loud.
It
would invoke more of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, they probably were not ready for that kind of... also one thing, pretty pro-Catholic in a Protestant world that's often hostile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was talking about people that think Catholics aren't saved and how they're just like out of it, you know?
Yeah, can I play that clip?
Yeah, do it.
Only other thing I ever learned from my little aunts was how all the Catholics on the face of the earth were supposed to go to hell. That's a doctrine some places. That's when they listen more to other people, run other people down than they listen to their own hearts and let God instruct them about what a Christian really is.
No, I'm just kidding.
And so they told me all this about how all the Catholics are going to go to hell, and boy, they put it down in flat terms. I mean, the way I learned it, I thought when a Catholic died, they took him downstairs and put him in a chute in the basement, you know, and just shot him off to hell. And I mean, it was go straight to hell. Do not pass, go, do not collect $200.
You got a big laugh.
And
I laughed.
Yeah, solid it's piece good. Of business.
Then took me out of that home, sent me to California, and I got my new foster family, and guess what religion they were? They Catholic.
Did you Catholic now?
I wound up in parochial school. And I got to tell you, if you ever get a chance to tell a nun that she's going to go to hell because she's a Catholic, don't.
I thought that was really funny.
I tried it, and you won't dig it.
Yeah.
Dig it.
I mean, it's clearly a time capsule. Lots of digging. Lots of dig. You dig this. Do you dig this?
Yeah.
I'm going to rap at you like it's that groovy. Kind of stuff.
Far out, groovy, man.
Far out, man.
But, I mean, that's an interesting kind of weirdly. I think he's being accidentally in our perspective is so skewed on it, but it feels like accidentally progressive in
parts.
Yeah,
because you can hear the discomfort in the audience.
Yes,
like
you
they're kind
can.
Of like the level of coughing on this background yeah. album is so funny, but you can hear them kind of like.
Yeah, I was taught that all Catholics are going to hell, and you're waiting for the ha ha ha, and you're getting like a go on.
Right. True. Glenn,
yeah, exactly.
They did the thing that you were talking about on Twitter maybe a week or two ago. About repeating the punchline
oh
that you hear. Did you notice that part?
Oh
listening to it? Here it is.
And we had picked behind the bush to do the transaction because it was safe. I mean, you know, when you're getting ready to sell Reds, you just don't get a sign and walk out in the middle of the college campus that says Reds for sale, you know. Because policemen take a very dim view of that. You can get real chafed wrists, you know, from being... just
chafe room.
Glenn, it was you that pointed this out, right?
Yeah, it's terrible. It's the comedy equivalent of chewing cud, and it's terrible. It should be. People should be escorted from the theater.
People shouting back your punchline.
Yeah, or not even shouting it out, but just like saying it to themselves in a very satisfied sort of way,
turning to their friend, chafed wrist.
Although to be fair,
I'm so guilty of that.
Well, I do that in conversation, but I would hope that that's more a reflection of like I'm listening to you.
Yeah, like I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, rather than like we're in a 150 seat whatever or 300 seat and I need all these people to know you know what I call that? I call that the we should codify this somehow, but like the Wes Anderson effect.
Art house laugh.
The arc light laughter effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Caroline and I saw Grand Budapest Hotel, Hollywood arc light, the weekend it comes out, and people were losing their shit like it was friggin' Airplane or Young Frankenstein or something like
that. I think actually a better example of that was when we saw There Will Be Blood. Which is kind of a, like, there's dark comedic moments, but people were laughing at things that, like, probably weren't supposed to be comedy, just anticipating because they were excited for the moment when he just, like, beats the shit out
He's
of a guy
get or something,
you know?
Shake.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, like, this memorable line. I was like, what is going on here? This is not The Heat. Come
that was,
on, guys.
The Heat. The greatest comedy of
I
all
laughed time. Very hard at The Heat. You know what? You can judge me.
Going to that movie is when I learned to not ask Caroline what she thought of the movie right after. Give it some space.
I got mad.
Give it a little buffer time. Because she had never seen it. So I said, oh, what'd you think?
Wait, There Will Be Blood?
Yeah.
No, I'd seen it before.
Oh.
I'd seen it a few times, yeah.
But I think it increased because she, I would say, screamed out, oh, I hated that. I hated that.
Yeah, I think I was also like, I had this, we don't have to get into it. Anyway.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Something with the audience?
No, I just think I had this perspective of like I'm so tired of like these male heroes in these movies who were like enjoying them because they're so awful and like abusive to people. Mm-hmm. And it's like kind of a funny thing, like how abusive they are. And I feel like it's cathartic for people in a way that I don't find comforting or like safe in any way. You know what I mean?
I get that. Yeah. If people are cheering for Heisenberg.
Yeah, and especially
or
because
Skyler.
They were all like chuckling about it, that I was just like, you guys are fucked up. Like, get out of here, you know?
Right.
Well, DDL's kind of funny in that movie. Like, in parts, right? Like,
no,
he's kind of Chaplin esque.
Yeah, yeah.
In some ways.
Anyway.
Isn't that cool?
Isn't that cool?
Should that go in the theme song?
Isn't that cool?
Money, cars, chicks, and dope. That was another, like, area of the time.
Well, and again, this is all. Fabricated, like,
yeah. Do you want to play some of his like Satanism story?
Sure.
Clips
well,
of that?
Well, I want to, yeah. And I guess a trigger content warning. He does talk about like a suicide attempt at one point in this special, which again, now it's like, well, did you have a thought like that? Who knows now? Mm-hmm. But this is the way he described it. And at first, it's like,
You accept the kind of half-truth of the premise because it seems like the setup for a good punchline. But then he keeps going. I'm like, I think you're just writing like your own fanfic of your life.
Yeah.
Because there's no jokes in it. Here, I'll play it.
Well, I didn't know that. You know, when I got out of the hospital after my overdose, I tried to kill myself. I did all this stuff, you know, oh, poor pity for Mike. Nothing worked. I tried to kill myself. I was sitting in a student union building writing a suicide note, had a gun in my waistband, getting ready to blow my brains out.
Where'd you get the gun?
And all of a sudden, the doors to the room that I was in opened up and three Campus Crusaders walked in.
Oh, this part.
They didn't know I was in there. They were taking a shortcut, and they walking through the room going, what a friend we have in Jesus, all our sins and griefs to bear.
We did do that a lot.
Now, you know, when you get ready to blow your brains out, you don't need backed up by a gospel trio.
That's funny. I like that.
Solid.
I jumped up and pulled out my gun, run over there and stuck that gun in this old boy's belly. I said, sing, sucker. And he looked down at that gun and he went, well, praise the Lord. He just stood there and waited for me to pull the trigger. I mean, he didn't care whether I killed him or not. You know how come? Because he had his insurance paid up, man. He was with Jesus Christ, Mutual Life.
Yeah.
It's
clapture. Lots of clapture.
A lot of clapture.
Yeah.
I'm glad you used that term too.
Yeah, grief. It's like, I mean, of course, you know, he's exaggerating a little bit, but you're also like, even if a little bit of this is true, it's insane that you pulled a gun on a person.
We all exaggerate all the time, but I don't say, yeah, I put a gun to his head and said,
no one called
sing
the police.
Sucker.
Sing yeah. Sucker?
Like,
yeah.
Like he's John Wayne and it's so strange.
And he plays it for a laugh and not like, isn't that insane how crazy I was?
Yeah.
Like
right.
Criminal?
But in a way, he's giving you all the clues. There's a one part where he says, you know,
like
I was
the snowman.
Exactly. I smoked some reds, and yeah. It's like, okay, yes. You didn't do that.
I know.
Didn't smoke any reds.
He references reds a lot. Like,
I don't
wait.
Know what the hell they are.
Guys,
I
was
really not
I was about to ask, what are reds?
They're okay. Not a thing.
Do
he
none of us know
up.
Our red? What
no.
Reds are?
I don't know. Or maybe it's like some 70s term for
it's,
like Advil.
Pills?
Quaaludes, maybe? But I thought Quaaludes were blue.
He also
know.
Says he got hepatitis 4 times.
Yeah. That's because the first 3 didn't take.
You know, hepatitis just kind of comes and goes.
Hepatitis 4 times, cancer 12 times, got friggin'
Yeah.
They caught the common hepatitis.
So, yeah, so strange. So, yeah, it's side A, and this is kind of just in cursory research of the other albums. A lot of the albums kind of function. This was kind of an accidental album, but the further albums, side A is like joke heavy and a lot of blah, 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 and parables and kind of retelling and like him doing his translation of Bible stories and like making it real funny. And then side B is like, but you know what, guys? There's a lot of, you know, and it becomes the kind of,
come to Jesus.
You know, when Miss Gadsby says, you know what? The story doesn't end there. That's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
The Hannah Gadsby of the 1970s Christian comedy scene.
All right, then.
Right.
I could say that about anybody because it's basically just him. He was the Chris Rock.
Glenn, for you listening to this as a, you know, what did you call yourself?
Comedy
sodomite?
Nerd? Sodomite. Oh,
yeah.
Sodomite, yeah. Yep.
Did you feel like any of this would have been convincing? Like, oh, maybe I should give Jesus a chance. Because to me, it sounds so corny that it would be like, no way in hell, you know? But
no way in hell. No, I mean, like, we got the album not only because it was funny, but because, like, it was a kind... It reminded me, it didn't sound evangelical. There's nothing fire and brimstone about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
This felt more mainstream, or straight down the middle Methodist, United Methodist kind of like, you know, maybe give him a chance is like about his
pretty
fire and
meek.
Brimstone.
Yeah.
Well, it's personal. It's about the personal Jesus. It's like your own personal Jesus. It seems to exist outside of what I would consider congregational, you know, Christianity, like, it's such about accepting it into your heart, you know, and that was not something I was getting really because at Sunday school it was about, you know, you have the felt board with the little Jesus on it and the Saul, mm-hmm. and like that's kind of straight down the middle. It wasn't about a personal connection,
Which bums me out, like hearing that it did function like that, and it probably did. Again, think about just how much less content and stuff and voices there were. The further and further we get back in just recorded history, it's like, whether you either read that book or you didn't, or like it was on one of the 4 channels or it wasn't.
Yeah.
You either got that album by chance and happenstance by this family or you didn't. You couldn't just be like, well, I'll just Google if someone kind of aligns with my sensibilities about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, stuff kind of finds you in a way that's out of your control. Well, now you have all of the control. And it bumps me out because it's like, all that being said, you don't need all the satanic occult stuff.
I know, right?
Just do the jokes and do the like personal stories. Don't make it like, and then I was, then friggin' virgins were getting sacrificed and I had a gun on my sex slaves. And just talk about like, nah, my wife and I kind of fight sometimes. I don't know. Like, just make it very, just bring it into the
home. Yeah. Honestly, and it's not as if he didn't have a difficult life, too, that he could have really pulled from with his story, too. And like, it's easy for me to pick apart, like, what a comedian should talk about. But it really, like, he didn't need to lie. Like, he was funny enough without it.
Gilding the lily with the blood of innocence.
Seriously. Sacrifice blood. And that's why it just feels like purely marketing, to the point where it's like, how much of like any of Christianity are you even bought in on?
Yeah.
Because if you're willing to sell it out that much and create that, like, to reshape culture for a good amount of years to this like complete bogus story, like, do you even care?
I know.
Truth important?
I think he does, because I feel like he, I don't know, I feel like he probably has, and this is all speculation, of course, like, I think he has a nut of belief in him that, like, really was going to get blown. Come on, you give me that look. But, like, I feel like there was this acorn of belief that was, like, that was planted, and that is true. And I think he just found out that, like, it was a more convincing speaking thing to do this and go into this, like, very exaggerated direction, and then also comedy and culture or whatever. And then he got too much power and he was corrupted. But he's still doing, you know, quote unquote ministry right now. And I think a part of him really believes that he is, like, saving souls and wants to do that.
Or does he need to eat?
Right.
And I think also needs to eat, because they are asking for donations on his website. And there's a blurb in there that's like, we don't get a salary, we don't get funded by any denomination, so we live off of, like, good people like you. So, wow.
So this scandal kind of blew him up, right? Ended his career, his comedy career, whatever. But you were mentioning that he was kind of the first of a wave of Christian stand-up. Is that a thing? Was that a thing?
Christian stand-ups?
Yeah.
It continues to be a thing to this day.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. So was he the first, really? No?
The first to my memory or mind, and I could be very wrong about that, but all the Christian stand-ups, like, that there is footage of, basically, like, on YouTube or, like, recordings of, it comes, like, late 70s, 80s, 90s.
Yeah,
stuff.
Like, I'm sure there were a few contemporaries of his at this time, but I just don't. Well, also, I think the, like, maybe genre of stand-up was coming into its
That's
own
true.
At the time, too. Yeah. So,
because maybe, and we wouldn't say it now, but maybe some people for a time would have classified Cosby as a Christian stand-up, because, like, he did the Noah and the Ark story, and he did this and that, you know.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much, like, and then it just calls into question, like, did you just, like, totally segregate this thing? So now people gravitate towards this because there's gold in them hills and they can just do, like, the church conference circuit and make their bucks. And, like, because he could have, again, if he just wanted to be a stand-up guy, just do that. Like, don't even put God into, or, like, you talk about a little bit the way you talk about, like, your family or your job or your kids. But it's just so.
Or maybe he, like, there just wasn't that path already, so he was kind of just flying with it.
I do want someone to make a movie about it, but I don't know who I want to direct it. My first thought is Coen Brothers. Who
would
you
be
guys
so
elect?
Funny.
Because it is a great story.
It is. And I feel like they're drawn to the kind of these, like, tragic, egocentric, weird dudes, you know?
Yeah, but they'd make Satanism funny. You know, they would steer into the kind of buffoonery of it, you know?
Yeah.
The wackiness.
He's straight out of Big Lebowski. Yeah, that'd be funny. See some of this stuff.
This
it's great. Good to laugh. yeah, okay, I'll play the little altar call at the end that we were talking about.
It's not important you like Phil. It's not important you like Honey Tree.
Those are his openers, I guess.
It's not important you like me. It's important that you like yourself. It's important that you like yourself enough to want the very best for you.
Your best life now.
And if you do,
kinda,
then you need Jesus. Like I said, he don't want to make you so nobody can recognize who you are.
That was real coffee.
He wants to you and make you the best you can be.
Now that is very 70s. That is very
the best you.
Your
Ronnie
Zones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to a clean comedy show a couple years ago for my brother's birthday that my mom arranged.
We went to one on a cruise ship a couple years ago.
Oh, that's right. And as the night went on, it became very clear that this was also like Christian comedy, basically.
Yep.
And one comedian, she was really funny. And but then by the end, she went into that full rattle talk of like, and by the grace of God and the Holy Spirit, and I know God told me this, that the Holy Spirit will come down into
right here,
you. And Matthew 17:2 said this and little, and just like went off. And everyone was like screaming for it, like loved it, losing
rushing
their
the
minds.
Stage, yeah. Moshing, yeah. Throwing their bras on.
I know.
The stage.
And I think they're all probably all Christians. Also, we were kind of one of the few white people in the crowd too, and so we're just like in the back eating our fries, like,
yeah,
congrats. Yeah. But it's still thriving, like it's still going on, and I think it's just now clean comedy, so people that want to see like comedians but not be offended can go to this.
And you can check out Thou Shalt Laugh Volumes 1 and 2 on DVD, starring Patricia Heaton. That's for real.
Oh man.
Some other people, I think Mark Lowry's on there, maybe Shonda's on there.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, I mean, technically, Sherry Shepherd, Christian comedian.
There's this woman, comedian Guy Branum, sent me a
clip. Oh, of course. Oh, yes. Oh, I know.
Who is this person?
Oh,
she's awesome.
Spiked hair lady?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
In a
pantsuit,
in a killer pantsuit.
Yeah.
Talking about her husband.
It sounds like a John Early's stand-up.
That's true.
Oh, no, it totally
not
looks
without
like
my
her.
Denim.
Not without my denim. It's of a piece with that, yeah.
Christian comedian woman.
Spiked hair.
All right,
pantsuit.
Spiked. Oh, here she is. Jean Robertson. This is it, right?
That's her.
Well, in our area of the country, when somebody gets sick that we know or has passed, we take over food. Have you noticed it? We take over food. You can buy that food. You can go to the deli and the grocery store, get something great, hire somebody to bake it, but put it down in the big list of important things for life. You get a lot more credit if you make it yourself. You can put it on your grandmother's platter, but the women in the kitchen will say, I know where she got that chicken. I'm telling you, it works out that way.
Solid piece of business.
Hi. This rocks. Yeah, no, I wanted to, yeah.
And she does not look like a, you know, lady stand-up.
No,
she's in
no.
a skirt suit and, like, nice jewelry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was turned on to it, too, because he was tweeting about it.
Yeah.
We'll have him on for
so
that.
I you should have him on for her. Because
yeah,
like,
I think so.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Because there is, and we talked about Shonda, I know there was blowback, but there's still craft. You still have to, like, have craft to do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that craft is undeniable. That being said, in other specials I watched, he did lift jokes. I think there was some Stephen Wright he plagiarized.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. Where he's like, you drive on a parkway, but you park on a driveway, like that stuff, which I think is a Stephen Wright joke.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So, I mean, yes, you still have to have craft, but you are playing for a very friendly audience. Like, they are on your side,
yeah.
right?
Right, because they came there to potentially hear a sermon and like getting a joke is a bonus, I think.
So and there are also probably no drunks in the audience, probably no, very little heckling, I would guess.
A lot of people with throat problems, though.
Sure.
Well, I would say, I think I would compare it to bowling with bumpers. It's like you're still throwing the ball down, but there's just so much less of it.
Yeah.
It's not going up at the Comedy Store after, you know, Dane Cook drops in. Why was that the first comedian?
Dane Cook.
He's dating like a 19-year-old right now. But yeah, no, you're right. It's almost like, and I've actually felt that way about podcast live shows because no one's there by accident.
Right.
Because it's not like, all right, up next, we got this new podcast, so you're never winning anyone over.
Can you imagine? Trying to win someone.
And then it's like an hour and a half. It's
Except if you're at a festival. If you're at a podcast festival, people can scram. Like, this sucks, and bolt.
Oh, no.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, and they have.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the issue with, like, all of Christian media, too. It is a very friendly
audience. Bat is corked, and the bumpers are on the lane.
That's right. We're all rooting for you.
It always happens that way. Well, let's get to our kind of final judgments on, I guess, this album Alive.
Let's limit it
to the album as a piece of work. The way this works, we'll give it a holy toast or a holy roast, holy toast. Thumbs up, we send Mike Warnke to heaven. Or a holy roast, we send him where he might be more comfortable with his former brethren. He goes to hell. Or the space between, because he believes, you know, Catholics or Christians do. All right, we'll start with you, Caroline.
I'm going to have to give it a holy toast. I think he's a little bit despicable as a person, but the album itself is... I'm sorry, guys. I didn't think it was very funny. Aww. It's that very like...
Wait, did you say toast or roast?
Wait, roast.
Oh.
Yeah, you
did
said
I say toast.
Toast?
Oh, okay. That was probably a real confusing moment for everybody. No, roast. Satan. Roast. Send him to Satan. Because I don't know. I just don't really like that like, oh, shucks, me kind of like, like humor. I would give it a roast. And I just also can't stand when people like bury these very important things and like are surprised you ask about it or something.
You know, so you hate Nanette is what you're saying. Oh. You hated Nanette. Because she buried a very important thing.
One for one.
Special.
Yeah. So holy roast for me. Mike
holy
Warnke.
Roast from Caroline. We turn to Glenn.
Mike Warnke the man. Holy roast. Mike Warnke alive. Holy the toast.
Well, holy toast.
Yeah. From solid piece of business.
From Glenn Weldon.
Remarkably not in your face. Out of your face. Far, far away from your face.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And palatable in a way that the dude himself probably is not.
Sure. No, I agree. And listening to this album, did I LOL by myself? You bet I did. Aww. Listening to it and making clips for this stuff, which is hard to do, especially by yourself. So I'll put it, I think, for all the considerations we've listed, in the space between, because it's not without merit. There's skill here. There's weirdly accidentally good messaging in it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But taken in context, so we'll put in the space between. You can vote. Put in the holy roast, holy toast, or the space between at Christian Fun Pod. Get out there. And of course,
Pokemon, go to the poll.
Just chilling.
Just chilling.
That'd be cool if she started doing stand up.
She's got the suit for it.
And she's, yeah. And everything about her life is very relatable. Wouldn't that be amazing
very
if she dropped in at UCB in Hell's Kitchen in New York? Or it was just like, she's like, y'all know what it's like to have men, you know, devalue the work you do. Like, it would be hard for every line not to be clapped or like the laugh applause that we were talking about. Everyone just like, yeah.
But just based on her delivery of Pokemon Go to the polls, she's not got the skill set. It's not.
Pokemon
it's
Go not to the polls.
Yeah.
So she just bombs and she just keeps trying to do it. She can't book a slot on like clap your hands. Or what is it? Put your hands together.
Good. Put your hands together.
All right, let's bring it down now for the last final segment. These synth pads, you may not find them in a United Methodist church, but you'll find them on the Good Christian Fun
church
podcast.
GCF.
Glenn, we'll go around the circle and just, you know, kind of give our prayer requests of where people can lift us up on social media, our books that we've put out, and where people can listen to us and, yeah, do that. And we're not plugging, we're lifting it up.
No,
there's
of course
a loving,
not. No.
Humble, no, of course not. You know how this works.
We don't do that.
A loving, humble sacrifice to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll start with Caroline.
You can lift me up at Caroline's Farts on Twitter and Instagram. I
want you to have to make eye contact with a guest when you.
You can lift me up at Caroline's Farts.
Sure. Glenn. It was worth it.
Thank you.
You should do that every
ground.
Time. An ashen face falls.
I don't have a great thing to lift up. I've been watching a lot of Kardashians lately. It's just a good show. And I like saying that because I like thinking that Kevin will just build that into his persona of me.
My persona?
Yeah, like what you think I like.
I feel like after 5 years of friendship and 1 year of working with you, I feel like I have a pretty good handle on your taste overall.
Yeah. Marvel Dashian.
Marvel Dashian.
That's it for me.
It's true that you were going to watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, but then when there was no superheroes in it,
there you go.
Yeah,
you got
like,
confused.
What the hell?
Was she getting fly? But her punchline sure do. Glenn,
nice, nicely done.
We turn it to you.
Folks can lift me up at G.H. Weldon on Twitter. It's for a stream of dad jokes.
I highly recommend it. I like your takes. You
thanks,
have a good, you have a nicely curated feed.
Thanks, man. Instagram, I think, is also G.H. Weldon. That's just shots of my dog at our cabin. And the book, The Cape Crusade, Batman and the Rise of Nerd Culture, is a book that is about the rise of toxic nerddom. And it feels... it gets more relevant every damn day.
Yeah.
It's also a lot about Batman. And, of course, Pop Culture Happy Hour, twice a week, available on all places you get podcasts.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
A weekly must listen for me.
No, thanks, man.
A twice weekly must listen. You can lift me up at Kevin Teaport everywhere. I'll lift up Cheers. I love that show. Been rewatching it for the first time. Ted Danson, super hot. But also, he looks like what he's wearing in the first three or four seasons looks good now.
Really?
Like, weirdly, the fact, because it's like tucked in plaid shirts and his pants fit well. Like, his fashion's good now again for some reason. Anyway, he's the best. Diane's the best. Cheers forever.
Yeah.
Hot take.
It's a real hot take. I think greatest sitcom of all time. I think better than Seinfeld, better than Simpsons, better than Big Bang Theory.
Mm. Don't gesture at me. I've never seen an episode.
Yeah, Justice for News Radio, though. News Radio, solid piece of
Justice for News Radio. Justice for News Radio, for sure. And you can lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. Leave us a review on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. And every review you leave, we'll donate $1 to charity. This month's charity,
we're going to be donating to the disaster relief for the fires going on in Malibu and here in California.
Hell yeah. You can check out our Good Christian Fun Spotify playlist on Spotify. Where else? And then you can always get a second weekly helping of Good Christian Fun. GCF Second Service. Go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun. Glenn, thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn.
It's my pleasure.
For joining
so much, guys.
Us on the show. And there's nothing left to say except for, and all of Pod's people said, Amen. Wait, what? We should go out with like a Christmas song or something. What should we go out with?
Oh, wait, no. No. I'm going to play Ray Charles' song with the turtlenecks in the background.
Oh, yeah. No. That's good. Which one? Georgia?
Georgia on my mind.
Okay, great. We're going out with the ultimate contrast of...
cool.
Of cool.
Just an old sweet song. Star. Keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind. Uh-oh. Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, feels good.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. We'll see you next week.
See you at choir practice.
I wish. I'd skip choir to be here today.
I'm Amy Grant. No, I'm just kidding, y'all. Hey, y'all, it's my Amy Grant. All right, we're in the middle of it. We're in the middle of Good Christmas Fun. And Kevin and Caroline want me to tell y'all that next week for Good Christmas Fun, they're listening to, wait a minute, they're listening to me, my second Christmas album. I got four, so I gotta be specific about which one it is. It's the second one, Home for Christmas. This is one where I'm like hugging a tree and I'm in all red. It's great. Oh, that was a fun shoot. I remember that day like it was yesterday. Anyway, they're doing that next week, so you can listen to Home for Christmas on Springwind and Pandorstify and Spotify and UFace and Apple Bluesic and all the beep boops on the internet. Amy Grant, Home for Christmas. Oh, this episode's gonna be the shit. Oh, I cannot can wait to see what Kevin and Caroline say about my album. I bet it's all positive. I bet neither of them say anything negative. Can't wait to hear it. Okay, a very expectant and hopeful Amy Mother Grant. Over and out.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.